Hello and thanks once again for taking the time to download and listen to our podcast from CelticUnderground.net. I'm Harry Brady and this is how it feels to be Celtic. I decided to do a very quick podcast with Hull Boy, where we dissect the game, talk about how crap they are, talk about how great they are, and talk about how Willie Collum will go down as having had a good game because he didn't do anything, and nobody will mention the fact that he should have sent at least two Rangers players off. But then, hey-ho, he apart from the two red cards, he had a great game. So I will leave this up to Hull Boy and I to chat about things. And all I'll say is, hail, hail. Isn't it great to be Celtic fan at this time? So I'm now joined by Hull Boy. I decided to do a quick post-game podcast, and I was a bit concerned that you might be somewhere in a blue and white, a blue or green bodysuit. I haven't dragged you away from any art installation, have I?
No. I'm kind of cultured out at the moment, I think. So...
Well, you got your football culture this afternoon.
Absolutely.
Before I get into anything about the detail, I'll just start at the very beginning. What were your thoughts on the team?
Team was not a surprise, really. Because I think, you know, the kind of the talk during the week was mainly around the central defensive pairing, and I think Sviatchenko has been slightly off the pace. Just one or two silly little errors in previous games. And so it was no surprise that it would be Simonovic and Boyata. Obviously, everybody's back to fitness now. So, again, up front, no surprise that it was Dembele ahead of Griffiths. And... I think, again, it wasn't a surprise to me that Roberts was going to get ahead of Forrest today.
Right.
Not least because they had a fullback who, I've got to say, once we watched the game, it was absolutely terrible, absolutely terrible.
We'll get on to whether he should have actually been allowed to stay on the park.
But... yeah, so the actual team selection wasn't a surprise. You know, they just came out the blocks. Great guns, really.
So, in terms of the team, I mean, my own thoughts, I think a lot of Celtic players, if you were to say, what's the bog-standard best Celtic team, would have actually come close to the team that Pedro Caixinha decided to... decided to say that Celtic would play with, and obviously you just identified the reasons why on a day-to-day basis based on recent games that wasn't the case. But on that, what's your thoughts on him doing this thing of naming other teams and naming his own team in advance and all that type of stuff?
I think it's absolutely fine for individuals to do work shadowing.
He comes across actually as an okay person, right? But I just think this is the type of thing that you do in a gimmicky way when you have no concept that you of the size of where you are.
Yeah, he is a clown in my view. He's got no basic grasp of what he is supposed to be in charge of. Which is fine for us. But I think he's going to be around for a bit and we could have a lot of laughs at his expense. I understand that he's done his post-match team or his post-match press conference demonstrating tactics with some water glasses.
Yeah, but I mean, there is a reason why he's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. He's on his fifth club in 6 and a bit years as a manager. I think there's a reason why for that.
Well,
which is
you know
it's that thing of, I remember very early on in my business career somebody saying, don't recruit someone who is never in a job for more than about 12, 18 months.
I think it's much more basic than that, Harry. I go back to the original press conference that Brendan Rodgers had after this guy was appointed. And they asked him about him. And Brendan Rodgers' reply was, I have never heard of him. Now, you cannot tell me that somebody like Brendan Rodgers and the football fraternity, they know very expansively about players, managers, coaches across world football, even if they've never met them.
Mm-hmm.
And you've got to remember that Brendan Rodgers himself has done a lot of travelling across the football fraternity over the years. So he will know almost everybody who's in the game. So for him to say, I have never heard of him, tells you everything about this guy.
Particularly when Brendan knows how the media work, and if he did know of him at all, would have probably said, oh yeah, I've not met him personally, but I have come across him in XYZ situation.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. I'm not saying that Brendan's averse to playing one or two games in press things, but I just thought that was a genuinely honest answer from him. And at that point, you kind of realise that who they've got is just, he's not going to be anywhere near up to the job.
No, I mean, it's there. It's the amazing thing that I read yesterday, it's the third manager of Rangers that Brendan Rodgers has faced.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which shows what they are. But the other thing about this, I'm so smart, I'm gonna name the opposition team to demonstrate. I think it's obviously to demonstrate this is how much I look into things. I can tell you the opposition team's gonna be. The problem is when you then get played off the park and the opposition haven't played that team and were able to wear smoking jackets, you leave yourself open for the question of, did you prepare for the wrong game, mate?
Mm. Exactly. And I've heard a bit of post-match punditry, and they would say it, wouldn't they? But, you know, most of them, many either ex-Rangers players or people involved with the club, you know, are all saying, oh, yeah, he definitely went with the wrong team today. So then
onto the game. And there's been a wee bit of chat of late about Celtic's game. A lot of Celtic's goals have come as games have worn on because we've just worn teams out with their passing and probing game. And as a supporter, that's great because you eventually win games. But it's also nice to get into the game early. So let's talk about early on in the game. Should Andy Halliday have stayed on the park?
No, absolutely not. It doesn't matter when you make a challenge like that in terms of, you know, whether it's the first 30 seconds or it's the 92nd minute, that was a clear red card challenge. It was serious foul play, which, as I understand it, is a red card offence.
Reckless?
Well, I'm told that reckless actually isn't a red card offence.
Right.
It's a yellow card offence. But serious foul play is a red card offence, and that's what it was. So, you know, if we're going to stick to the kind of letter of the law in terms of terminology, and you can't tell me that was a lesser challenge, if you like, than the one Scott Brown got sent off for last week.
No, I mean, absolutely. I mean, I've already been saying if I was Celtic going in, I know they don't work this way, but if I was Celtic going in for the appeal, I'd have already shown the Holt challenge on Patrick Roberts in the last game at Celtic Park, where not only was it not a red card, it wasn't a yellow, and they actually got play on and they nearly scored from it. I would show that. I'd show the Inverness guys challenge at Celtic Park. I'd show the Motherwell challenge at Celtic Park. And now I chuck into the mix Andy Halliday's and say, can you please tell me why none of these are red cards? Some of them aren't even fouls, and why this one was a straight red.
I think the other thing for me as well is if you look at the, I don't know, the mentality, if you like, behind that kind of challenge so early in the game, it tells me a lot about their team attitude, in that actually they almost know right from the kickoff that they can't compete with Celtic in terms of ability and tactics. And I think what we might see more of are challenges like that over and over again, because I can't see. I'm almost reluctant to say this, but I genuinely cannot see how they can challenge us in the next 4 or 5 years. I know people say, you know, the cliche, football's a funny game, but how can they get anywhere near the level of ability that Celtic have got?
Genuinely, the only way that I can see them getting anywhere near is that...
Not that I want them to, by the way.
No, but the only way I can possibly see them getting anywhere near is the SFA grow a set and say, look, we should never have put this guy through, this King guy through, as a fit and proper person to be with a football club. He's now been cold-shouldered, and party to a court case against him for not following regulations and legal requirements. So retrospectively, we've decided we need to punt him out of the game. So Rangers, you need to get rid of him. And they then bring somebody in who... has got money. It's the only way that I can see them catching up with us, because they're playing. If they now again, part of their business model is predicated on the fact they're going to be playing European football this season. There's two aspects about that. One, with the current financial situation, where they've admitted that only a rights issue, and they don't pass it because of their debt, which means debt for equity swap. They can't do a debt for equity swap because of the cold shouldering. They've got a cold shoulder, well, eventually, guy in charge. They don't fit the criteria to get a UEFA licence. But even if they do get one, they're playing European football in June. They'll never get more than a couple of games and then they'll be out. They're not going to get to the Europa League group stages. So there's no way, footballing-wise, that they can get more money in. The team needs major changeover. They don't have the finances to get the major changeover, so you're right. I can't see how.
Well, they obviously will want a major clear-out, but I would think that most of those players who were playing today will be playing against us for them next season.
Yeah, I mean, if you look...
So how can they... I don't know what kind of contract... I mean, the only one that I know about contract, because it's over and over again in the media, is that Kenny Miller's... contract is up, and that they all think that he should get a new one. I mean, obviously, I couldn't care less whether he gets one or not, but to be honest with you, that seems to suggest to me that all the others are in contract, so therefore, how are they going to buy them out of the contract?
Yeah,
and then, when they've got no money.
And then you've got things like, so at half-time, it was no surprise to me that Halliday was substituted, because we were actually discussing at half-time how much we were playing with our smoking jackets on, and is there any way that Rangers could change it? And we would, you know, because you're obviously looking, is there any way that they can get back into this game? The only way that I could see them getting into the game was actually to try and put in some, to try and get more out of the midfield, to try and get control of the ball in the middle of the park. And we were discussing that Halliday, either Halliday's garbage, or by having that booking in the first 2 minutes and the only thing he can do is run around and kick people, it just made him completely anonymous for the rest of the game.
No, I've seen enough of him now in the games that we've played against him to know that he's absolutely rang rotten as a footballer. And that's the thing. Much as we loathe them anyway, if you try and be objective and assess the quality of their players, they are absolutely woeful. I think there were at least two players playing for them today who were nowhere near professional football standard. Nowhere near. There's probably more. But if you look at the likes of Halliday, that Holt, it's night and day between the level of ability of our Celtic midfield players.
The other thing is, you know how sometimes when we play someone like Motherwell, you know about five of the Motherwell players?
Yeah.
And then if something else happens in the game, you're saying, who was that? I don't know. It was their number 61. And you've no idea who that is. That was the other thing today at Hamden. When one of their players tried to kick us, who was that? Don't know.
Well, I noticed Remy tweeted to say that the two of their players, is it that the 61, whatever they call him, and the guy at the back,
the tall ginger-haired guy.
Yeah, the Hamden screens didn't have any pictures of them when they were going through the team lineups.
I never noticed. I was at Hamden. I never noticed that.
So that tells you everything. Tells you everything.
So if we then get on to our goal, so I'm in the north stand, row L, which, as you know, that means you're quite close to the front in Hamden. But actually, it was not a bad view. But it was north stand, sort of level with the 6-yard line.
Of the goal
line at the Celtic end. So not everything's clear as to the one thing I do know, see as the ball came to Callum McGregor, there's me looking down, Callum McGregor, and huge big space. He had about 5 feet. And as it came to me thinking, if he just side foots this, it's a goal.
I knew that was a goal as soon as Dembele had turned his man and I knew he was going to lay it off. And I knew that, sounds arrogant to say it, but I knew that Celtic were going to score. I didn't quite know how McGregor would actually take it, but providing his shot was on target, and yet I knew it was a goal. And then, in actual fact, he did exactly the right thing. So, you know, kind of rather than leather it, he literally just passed it into the goal. And he didn't actually pass it right into the corner. So that tells you everything really about both the fact that he completely lost his man and also their goalie was nowhere near it.
Do you know that I'm not long back in from the game and I was listening to Radio Scotland in the car on the way back, and what they were talking about was the Celtic players just thinking a second quicker than their opponents. And the point that they made...
A second?
Well, what they were saying
was...
A minute. I know it's more than that, it's about 5 seconds. But the point they were making was that the McGregor knew the ball was coming to him well before any Rangers player knew that the ball could be going to McGregor.
Absolutely, that's my point. Not to go on about them, but this is why they are so woeful, because... They've got traits that have, I don't know, poor levels of professional quality that they can't even anticipate things that Celtic are going to do, and Celtic is just light years ahead of them.
Yeah, I mean, and then we'll get on to this later in the podcast as we talk through the game, but the other thing it was my brother mentioned to me. He said, you know how in tennis, When a guy's on top in tennis, so one of the things they then talk about is how many unforced errors there were in the game.
Yeah.
How many times, when they're trying to play this play out from the back, as we do, did the keeper, or Danny Wilson in particular, I noticed this in the second half, just pass the ball straight out of the park?
Yeah, I think it was in double figures. Those ball boys must be knackered.
No. They also did that in the League Cup. One as well, where once under pressure they just pass the ball out of the park. Getting back to your point of they're not actually very good footballers.
No. And the thing is, I know Scottish football, much maligned, we'll always try and defend it, you know, we'll stick up for our own team, obviously. But actually, one of the things about Scottish football at the Premiership level is there are actually some quite decent players. And they are very, very well organised professionally. And you couldn't say that on either count about them today.
No. So that then gets into the meat of the first half. I actually can't recall many a first half in Hampden where, with the exception of goals, it has been so one-sided. The only period that would have skewed the possession stats was when Dembele was off and the ball didn't go out of play for 5 or 6 minutes.
Well, no. Actually, you're right. But the only thing that skewed the possession stats was that at half time, Radio Scotland. I flipped over to that because I wasn't at the game today. They had 81% possession for Celtic. So I checked that on the BBC website on my app, and they had 75% possession. So. Gut feel, I thought, yeah, that's probably about right. Sky Sports came back on from its ad break, and surprise, surprise, they had Celtic 65% possession. So where they get their stats from, I don't know, but it certainly wasn't 65%, 35% in the first half.
No, I mean, honestly cannot
Celtic
recall.
Had all the ball.
I honestly cannot recall a more dominant.
No. No. And I mean, Brendan said after the game, which it's funny because the phrase was going through my mind myself, and he just said the first half performance was a masterclass. And it was, because if you're the manager on the touchline, you're watching that, and you've been working with the players all week, and you know all of the stats that you want to see, Brendan will have known that the ball was with Celtic for virtually the whole of that half.
Yeah. I mean, the only period when they had any part possession was when Dembele was off.
Correct.
And I was getting increasingly frustrated with the people around me who don't understand the basics of football, which is the substitution can't be made until players stopped. Because there was people around me getting agitated that Griffiths wasn't. Why aren't you bringing on Griffiths? Get Griffiths on.
Yeah, you can't do that if the ball's in play. There's two things. One is, you probably don't know, but it was pretty clear straight away that Dembele was not going to take any further part. But Griffiths himself, and I don't know why, but he wasn't actually ready to come on.
Well, that's what I could see. I looked across and, I mean, granted, if the ball had gone out of play, Celtic would have just then made it be held up until Griffiths was ready, but it was pretty clear that Griffiths seemed to be taking ages to get ready.
Yeah, that was the initial problem. So if he'd been ready, then they could have made that substitution like for like straight away. But then, as you say, you know, the ball stayed in play. I don't think Celtic were under. One of the brilliant things about that little transitional period was the way in which Celtic completely changed their shape with the 10 men to go more compact.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I mean, I've been there myself at games, and you get a little bit fearful because you're down to 10 men and they've maybe got a bit of the ball. But actually, if you watch it again, whenever you watch it, the Celtic shape of the team just completely changed to be more compact.
Because actually what we were discussing was, although they had possession, they were doing everything that we would want them to do when we get 10 men, which is just pass the ball sideways, backwards and forwards.
Correct. And that's what I mean about Celtic shape. That almost forced them to do that. There was nothing else on for them. And again, that's because they don't have any striker players who have the ingenuity to kind of create gaps, create space, pull defenders around in the same way that we were doing that. You know, kind of virtually the whole 90 minutes.
The only thing, once it got to about 3 or 4 minutes with Dembele off, twice the ball went to Gordon.
Gordon should have kicked it out then.
Yeah, Gordon played it twice to Celtic players. The second time it went, somebody didn't get it. I think it broke to Lustig, and Lustig leathered it out of the park and then turned around and went absolutely mental at Craig Gordon.
Gordon did have the opportunity to kick it out. But again, you know, I don't know. When you're actually in live in games and what have you, sometimes you don't think about that, because I think one thing that we're seeing now with Brendan is that they're just, it's totally drilled into them that they've got to keep possession.
Yeah. And that's what I thought. He's just thinking, keep the ball.
And keep the ball alive. I know that the big phrase at the moment is kind of recirculating or recycling. So that, you know, they obviously try and do that regardless of the fact that they're a man down.
So then after that, we then come on to the second Rangers player who should have been sent off, the number 61, whatever his name is.
Yeah. I mean,
there was a brief period there where they couldn't cope with Robert, so they were taking it in turns to kick him.
Yeah.
I mean, my brother got a text from my nephew who was at home watching the game with about 2-3 minutes to go in the first half and said, they've now just resorted to trying to kick us off the park.
Yeah, I mean, it was definitely... I mean, obviously he got one yellow card, but it was a second yellow. You know, it was as bad a challenge as the first one, and it's just that kind of standard yellow card challenge. So Colm, yeah, I mean, I've heard people say, no, he had a decent game today, but he bottled it on that.
Well, he had a decent game in terms of nothing majorly controversial.
Correct.
But that's because he didn't send a Rangers player off inside the first 2 minutes.
Mm.
And then didn't send a Rangers player off just before half-time.
Yeah. And there was a very strange one in the second half, which we may get into when we start talking about other moments in the game, which it wasn't him, but I just found it very, very odd. But, I think, again... That should have been a red card. And I mean, obviously, if we'd gone into the second half against 10 men, then, you know, it would have just been more of the same as the first half. But I thought once Griffiths got on and we were back to 11 men, you know, we finished that half in the same way that we'd played the first 35 minutes or so.
Do you know the other thing about the game? That at half time, you know, you're talking away and we're saying, oh, Brown's had a fantastic game. Oh, Brown's been fantastic. And then somebody will say, but see, when the ball's been played to Roberts, they've not known how to cope with them. Aye, Roberts correct. Was having a great game. But it was the right choice to play McGregor instead of Rogic. Aye. McGregor's having a great game. And Armstrong, he's just can't. And you suddenly realise there's five or six players that you can all justify being the best player in the first half.
Exactly. I mean, for me, Bruni did really, really well today, but I thought McGregor was absolutely brilliant. And I also thought Roberts, as you say, kind of, he did exactly what you would expect Roberts to do in terms of his skills and how that completely spooked their defence, and particularly that guy who couldn't cope. And as I say, you know, the challenge by Halliday tells you everything about what they thought about the threat of Roberts.
And you're just hoping, you know, because he's still young and he's not the biggest player in the team, you're just hoping that he's got the mentality and the senior players around him have got the mentality to be able to say to him, might not be nice getting kicked, but keep doing it, because either one of them will get sent off or they'll stop kicking you.
I think he's... For such a young lad, I think he's actually quite mature as a player. I've rarely seen him get rattled when he's been halved in two virtually by an opposition defender. And I think kind of longer term, you know, I'd really love it if we could get him permanently. I think he just gives us so much. And as I say, at his age, if you think of what he might be like when he's 25, 26, and, you know, hopefully we'd have him on a permanent deal. You know, great player.
Well, it's just then when you've got, you know, this season, as soon as he's not been playing well, Forrest is in. As soon as Forrest isn't playing well, he's in. Even in a game, you're then able to do that thing of tell them to run one of them to run their socks off for 60, 65 minutes and the other one comes on.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly right. And that's the thing, as you were saying about, you know, well, who was the best player that you were talking about at half time, but it's all about them, but it's also about the fact that you've got the equivalents now on the bench. Not in every position, but in quite a few positions. So yeah, you know, Rogic didn't start, but you know that if Rogic comes on, which he did, he's going to do the things that he did do.
So then we're into the second half, and the second half starts off pretty quickly into it. We get a penalty. Do you know what the game, for a moment, I actually thought he was going to book
Griffiths. Yeah.
For diving.
And to be honest with you, that is, I mean, it was a stonewaller just to start off with. But I think that's where we've got to with some of our kind of paranoia, that you see those incidents and they are so clear cut, but because of the way in which the game is being refereed up in Scotland, not just this season, but obviously in the past, you increasingly kind of think to yourself, yep, you're going to get yellow carded.
Because he didn't do that referee thing of point and immediately, you know, sprint forward, pointing, going at the diagonal of the box. He was going towards it, which I actually wonder if the official behind the goal at that end was the guy who gave the penalty.
It was, yeah.
And I did wonder whether there was a conversation between Colm and him saying, Colm saying, from my angle, that's a penalty.
Yeah.
What's your thoughts? And he gets the opportunity to say, aye, penalty.
Aye, so, you know, all's forgiven. Not. But they think it is.
And do you know what the other thing? I bet you there'll be Rangers fans at the back of the Rangers end where you're a million miles away from the pitch saying, they've only got that because the pressure they've been putting on refs all week. I bet you that's why they got the penalty.
No, it was an absolutely clear penalty. I've seen the replay a couple of times and you know, there was a lot of talk during the week about the way in which players are professional over these decisions and inviting contact and all the rest of it. But actually, when Tavernier is coming towards Griffiths, Sinclair's in the middle, so actually you would expect Griffiths to shape onto his right foot to lay the ball square.
Yeah.
But he doesn't. He takes the ball with his left foot and away from the goal. And in actual fact, that is what really created as being a stonewall penalty. Because if he had actually gone with his right foot and tried to play the ball across to Sinclair, I think that Tavernier, by definition, would have not fouled Griffiths, but actually intercepted the square pass.
But the other thing, just as you're talking, and obviously when you watch on the telly, you obviously get the replay so you can get to see how this arrived. But just as you're talking there, I'm thinking, he was in the Celtic's inside right channel.
Correct.
Was the Rangers right back doing, making that foul?
The reason is because they'd pushed up, and again, watch it over, but their central defensive partnership were absolutely all over the place. So when the ball came out and the long pass was played down to Griffiths, you literally can see in the middle of the park, is it Wilson and the other guy?
Yeah, Wilson and Ginger.
They've turned round and the ball is already, I would say, 40 yards behind them, you know, going towards their goal.
Mm-hmm.
And you can almost see that kind of collective bubble speak go above their heads of saying, oh, shite. So, of course, the right back, you know, because he thinks he's speedy Gonzalez, he's obviously just raced as fast as he possibly could to try and limit the damage, and obviously ends up making an absolutely stupid challenge, you know.
And thereafter, there was a short spell just after the second goal. By the way, see for the penalty. So I'm in line with the 6-yard box, so I decided just to look at the back of the net. I can't watch it. I decided. So out of the corner of my eye, I see, you hear the noise, and then you hear it hit the post, and then going in, and you do realise that the keeper's managed to get something on it.
Yeah. I mean, what that says to me is that actually, and before I, funnily enough, I had a bit of a negative feeling about it, probably because of the penalty missed the other week, and I just thought to myself, oh, do you know what? It might not score here. But it was actually a decent penalty. Because that keeper's pretty tall, isn't he?
He is.
And probably out of all their players, in terms of a standard, he seems to be quite a bit of a decent shot stopper. Not saying much about the rest of his game, but he saved them quite a few times today.
Yeah, although, again, one of the things I noticed, particularly for the period, 10 minutes, 15 minutes or so after our second goal, he is a parrier of shots.
Yeah.
So there was a couple of times where if we just had somebody fallen up a bit quicker, it caused them a problem.
Well, there was an incident late on as well where actually, and you're right, he's done that in some of the other games as well, where he receives the shot but he spills the ball, but then he pounces on it at the second attempt.
Yep.
Whereas, decent goalkeepers, will take the ball fully. Sinclair nearly got in on one of the ones.
That's right, towards
the end of the second half. So...
So the again, this is where I thought Brown had a good game. In the second half, as it went on, we were patently just playing possession football. Don't do anything stupid and we've won the game. And there was a couple of occasions where Lustig a couple of times and Simonovic and Boyata, but mainly I remember, there may have been other, but my main recollections are Lustig and Simonovic getting caught, allowing themselves to be pressed, and it was Brown who then came round and swept up behind them.
Yeah, that's correct. I think the other thing is as well, don't get me wrong, Gordon's improved massively with the ball at his feet, and you can see how now he is part of that kind of like passing start to how we build up attacks. But there was once or twice where Gordon actually sees the simple pass as being the one to do, and that's the player that he can see most clearly. And in actual fact, that's not the pass that he should make sometimes.
Yeah.
So I think it was late on in the game, and the ball went out to Boyata.
Yeah.
And the ball got rechanneled back to Gordon, by which time Boyata naturally had come much deeper towards the corner flag. And Gordon wasn't under particularly any pressure, but obviously they'd pushed up a little bit as opposition. And Gordon actually should have turned the ball the other way, but it went back to Boyata. So by that time, Boyata's getting kind of pegged back in the corner. You could see Boyata wasn't happy with Gordon. It's just little subtle things like that where he still needs to work on his choice of pass.
Yeah, I can understand what's been said to him has been, right, okay, as play, try and anticipate that the ball's coming back your way. Don't think about too many options. Just think of, as the ball's coming back to you, just think of two places that you can play it. One there and one there, and it's about out balls. I had a bit of debate with someone on the way home. He was sending a couple of texts, bemoaning the fact that we should have scored more and gone on, with the amount of domination, we should have scored more. And then said, but that's how they were allowed to come back into it. I replied saying, they were never in it. Yes, they had a couple of chances in the last 10 minutes, but having a couple of chances and not being in the game, it just means you had a couple of chances. The only real chance I was concerned about was Kenny Miller's header.
Yeah, I agree with that. And again, I'm not sure who was supposed to pick him up. But, you know, it is little moments like that where you just think, you know, they could have been back in there.
Yeah, because you only need... He gets that header in, goes to 2-1. We're still winning the game, so we tend to be... That puts them on the front foot.
Yeah, yeah.
Somebody takes a shot from 25 yards, hits somebody's heel, careers into the top corner.
Yeah.
And a game you've dominated. And that's why all I wanted in the last 10 minutes was Celtic to score a third goal, so you could just enjoy those last 10 minutes knowing...
Yeah, I agree. But I think even when it got to kind of like 85 minutes, you could tell the support, you know, coming through the TV that, you know, they knew it was won then.
Oh, I mean, you know, when you're at the game and you're watching everything, you know, your only concern is just, well, it only takes it to balloon off somebody's heel and changes the dynamic of it. You also have a referee who, as we've just discussed, doesn't want to do anything controversial.
No.
So you can have a situation where Rogic gets brought down inside the D, and that's a play on.
That was absolutely atrocious decision. That and again, wow. What is it that the referees see at a particular incident that makes them think, do you know what? I'm going to come up with a different conclusion to everybody else who is watching that particular incident objectively. And not only that, Rogic is down on the ground, kind of looking for kind of medical attention of some kind. Okay, didn't need to bring the physio on, but it's quite clear that he has been kind of like physically stopped.
Yeah, I mean, I think that might have been beyond the 85th minute or there or thereabouts. And again, the only thing I could think of, he was then at the point of, which is, I think the reason we didn't get the penalty against Rangers at Celtic Park, because I think referees in Scotland, when they're refereeing a game like that, you know, particularly Celtic v Rangers, I think they go into defensive mode.
Yeah, absolutely
so
right.
Nothing controversial, no controversial decision in the first 5-10 minutes. So hence the reason Halliday doesn't get red carded. Because that's part of the, if I send a Rangers player off inside the first 3 minutes, I've changed the game.
Yeah.
And then when it gets to the final 2 or 3 minutes, or final five or 6 minutes maybe, any decision I make now is likely to be the final determining decision of the game. So I think that's why we didn't get the penalty against Rangers, because that would have been, I've won the game for Celtic.
Yep.
And I think Colum didn't give that game, that free kick to against Rogic, because he's thinking, I give this free kick and Celtic score, game's over, that's it. And my decision's been the final thing.
Yeah. Well, the other one that was like really strange, which I said I would mention, is second half, kind of again late on in the game, and Waghorn got through and he was offside. He was clearly offside.
Aye.
But he shot, and he got the shot away, and it had gone wide. And it was only after the shot had gone wide that the flag then went up from the linesman. And I was left, they showed that as a replay, and I was left thinking to myself, again, this is all this kind of like, are we paranoid, conspiracy, all the rest of it. And I thought to myself, was he actually waiting to see if that shot went in the goal? And if it had gone in the goal, would he have kept his flag down?
Because
it was bizarre. It really was bizarre.
I don't watch I think outside when Celtic have played Rangers, cumulatively in the last 4 years, I've maybe maxed out at 20 minutes of football cumulatively that I've seen of Rangers. Really haven't watched them at all. So I don't know how they play. But in the first half, they're attacking the goal that, as I said before, I'm in line roughly with the 6-yard box. So I'm noticing that any time they come forward, Waghorn patently doesn't have pace and stands in an offside position.
Correct.
I'm quite sure his concept is, I'm going to stand in this offside position. If we keep moving forward, the defence will come to me and then I'll be onside. And no doubt that works at the lower league level.
Yep.
With where defenders panic a bit, see a guy behind them, and one of them drops deep and ruins the offside trap.
Yeah. Well, actually, Garner is the same.
Yeah, and as you pointed out, whatever you say about Scottish football, one of the things that in the top league at the Premiership is teams are better coached.
Yeah.
So it's probably the reason why, as I say, I've not been watching them every week, but I do know that Waghorn and Garner haven't played as much as it was some of the Rangers fans might have expected, and maybe that's the reason why, because you can't go. So, consequently, when that chance happened in the second half, it's at the other end of the pitch to me, but when I saw it was Waghorn that it was coming through to, based on just the first 45 minutes, the first thing I did was look across at the linesman, thinking,
absolutely.
Yeah. Well, the position he's in, he'll be offside, and he wasn't, and then his flag went up.
Yeah, but the thing is, I mean, if you're a linesman, assistant referee, whatever you want to call it, it's that old thing of when you become active. Well, you know, time and again, if you watch these incidents, the flag goes up when the player takes his first attempt at playing the ball, but the flag went up after he played the ball.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, that was the whole thing. The second the ball, you would, if you were a linesman, almost instantaneously, as he's got his foot in his back swing to hit
that's
through the ball.
That's when the flag goes up.
That's when the flag goes up. And it didn't. As you say, it didn't. It was only, because actually initially, as the flag was, because I then saw the flag was going up and I thought, he was signalling for goal kick, and then I realised as he was holding it, I thought, no, he's holding an offside flag. Yet he only, as you say, he only flagged for that once the ball was halfway towards the back of the Rangers' end.
Yep, exactly. Weird. Absolutely weird.
So then we also did something that we're becoming adept at as well, not quite as much as at Ibrox, but we managed to waste 2 minutes from about the 88th minute through to the 90th minute down in the corner flag, which was then... The move eventually finished with us having hit the post.
Yep. Which was a tremendous strike by Rogic.
Yeah.
I think we'll always, you know, wait and see how it develops. But Brendan still keeps talking from time to time about this team developing. But some of the professionalism, like those little incidents towards the end of the game, of just trying to play a keep ball and being completely aware of what the opposition is trying to do, to me, you know, that just all kind of shows you little signs of that development and maturity, I guess is the word. Not panicking. And, you know, the players have got this, they've got the skills... you know, to play that keep ball for 30 seconds, a minute, you know, 2 minutes down in the opposition's half. And, you know, I mean, there's a time years and years ago where that was seen as cynical, but it's just part of the modern game. So
yeah, down in the same corner, God, I was going to say 20 years ago, but it's closer to 30 years ago, down in the same corner, Roy Aitken decided just to blutter the ball into the back of the same end.
Exactly. Yeah.
I mean, to this day, I still think.
Yeah.
Was he actually trying to deflect? Because it was a free kick, wasn't it? And he just booted it. To this day,
thinking. Yeah, yeah.
Was he actually trying to maybe hit it off the Rangers' wall so that it went out for a corner? But no, it was just a straight line kick out of the park.
So yeah, and I mean the other thing is as well is you know, it's a small point, but at that point, you know, the collective set of officials seem to lose complete memory about the 10-yard rule.
Yeah.
At free kicks and corners, you know. So
yeah, it's funny you should say that. Again, I keep making reference to comments my brother made at the game. It was exactly that point my brother turned to me and said, is the 10-yard rule only relevant if you've got a free kick where you're taking a shot on goal?
Yeah. Willie Collum's got tiny steps when he does when he walks out of that 10-yard for a free kick, you know.
You know what they say about men with small feet?
Yeah, exactly, yeah. I'm size 11.
size 15 myself. There you go.
Yeah, I'm sure those walls are only about 6 yards from the ball. yeah. when free kicks get taken in. Will he call them referee games?
So overall, my nervousness at the game comes from just in the last, as you say, last two or three minutes, you know they're not, even if they got a goal, they're not going to get back into it. But you're thinking, I don't even want them to take it to 2-1 because it will just give an unrealistic impression to the neutral who's a casual observer who watches the highlights tonight that the game was closer than it was. We played that game wearing smoking jackets and reading the paper and smoking cigars.
Absolutely. And I think the thing for me is, and it's kind of probably collectively the disappointment of the last game at Parkhead, was I think this season in these games, I think I've said it in previous podcasts, it's still the opportunity for Celtic to kind of, in an unwritten way, oversee the demise of the old firm. And I think when you're not at games like I wasn't today, you notice it even more in the media, in the Sky, are desperate to kind of, you know, give this the two sides of the same coin, 50-50, everything's the same, you know, old rivals, etc. And the thing that completely weakens that is if Celtic become so increasingly dominant, and as we saw today, that Rangers are so incredibly poor and miles behind. And I just want that every game.
Yeah, do you know, I'd said to someone, might have even been in a text message to you a couple of weeks ago, about how Barcelona's got two well-supported teams. Madrid has two very well-supported teams. We've seen when Atletico have done something, how many people turn out in the streets of Madrid. But yeah, from a global perspective, Barcelona is Barcelona, is Barca. Madrid is Real Madrid.
Yep.
And I said that I can really see Glasgow becoming Celtic.
Yep.
And then whoever it was that I sent that in a text, who came back to me and said, yes, there's a thread on Follow called the Espanolification of Glasgow.
Oh, yeah, it says, yeah. No, that is a very, very real phrase now. And I've actually seen, I think it's people like Jerry McCulloch have been referring to it now, because you see it all across social media now.
And there should see the other point. So Eddie Pearson, Celtic Rumours, was on holiday during the Easter period in some jet set place like Lanzarote or Tenerife or something like that. And he was commenting that there were Celtic jerseys. The point being, they're also making this happen themselves with their thing with sports division. Because he was commenting that the Celtic jerseys, and you go into shops that will have the Man United strip, the Chelsea strip, the Real Madrid strip, you know, the Bayern Munich strip, the Celtic strip. You just do not see Rangers stuff, because the Rangers fans are boycotting their merchandise, so they're not wearing it. It's then not being promoted anywhere. So it's actually, they're compounding it themselves with their own actions.
Yeah, I had not thought about that, actually. That is a good point. I just thought that Eddie was on holiday in Corby, but that is a good point. So they've cut the nose off to spite the face, really, in terms of not letting their club colours be seen.
I mean, you know, although we talk about being football fans and don't like this type of terminology, but brand awareness.
Yeah.
If you do not do marketing and sales,
no.
The biggest way that football clubs can get a wider market presence is the sale of their jerseys to and if you're not doing that, the Espanolification becomes increased.
Well, I think the other thing is, as well, as just on that theme, is, you know, because Celtic have made the official announcements this week for the new kit, you know.
Yeah.
And you can see there's so much thought being put into that launch. So, you know, the launch date.
It's on the day of the local elections, so the schools will be off.
Yeah.
So kids will be about.
Yeah. So and May the 4th, Star Wars Day, you can whether that was intentional or not, you can come out with any kind of like themes around, you know, Celtic and the Star Wars analogies, you know. So there's obviously so much thought goes into it. Obviously, at the end of the day, they want to shift as many jerseys as they possibly can. But all of that is, you know, it's, I know people criticise sometimes the commerciality of Celtic, me included, but you can see exactly what they're doing. And, you know, the other side of the city, it's almost the last thing that they want is for that to happen to their club.
Yeah, I mean, as you say, we can criticise the commercialisation, but at the end of the day, if we shift an extra X number of jerseys, it puts an extra Y number of pounds in the pocket for Brendan Rodgers.
Absolutely right. Absolutely right. So,
Espanolification, I tell you what, see, if I was a Rangers fan after today, I would not be looking forward to the fact that they're having the players in their next game.
No. I'm the same, really. And I know we've got, you know, still got the aspirations to go and beat them through the season. I'd be more worried about some of the other top five teams that we've got to play.
Absolutely. Anyway, yeah. My dog barking away. I will. Somebody's just told her the score. I will. I better say, Hull boy, thanks very much.
No problem, Harry. Cheers. Speak soon.
I hope you enjoyed that podcast there with Hull boy. We've got some special music from today to play us out. Just enough time for me to say there's plenty of Foundation stuff to look up. In fact, Foundation stuff is coming fast and furious. There's a Henrik v Lubo game, and I think there's just a sprinkling of tickets left available for that. There is the abseil down off the North Stand. It's next weekend, so it may be a bit tight for you to do it and raise £125, but well worth it if you're into that sort of thing. Circumstances prevent me doing it. I was planning to do it, unfortunately not. Then there is the golf day on Friday the 16th of June. So contact the Celtic FC Foundation, get your team in for that. There's a pitch, the strip launch on the 4th of May, which isn't a Foundation event, but that is in the run-up to the Cup Final, and then everything around May the 25th and the Cup Final weekend, which hopefully is going to be something special if you've got your tickets to the Hydro, and keep your eye out for everything else that's going to be announced in relation to the 50th anniversary of Lisbon. Anyway, enough of me. This is me, Harry Brady. That was him, Hull boy. Final thing is just to say that St Anthony of this parish is going in for an operation. You may know if you follow him on Twitter that he was in a couple of weeks ago, in for 11 days. He's going back in for an operation, so hail, hail, and all the best to St Anthony. No more kids, but hey, that's life. And I'll leave you with the Celtic fans just reminding us, this is how it feels to be Celtic. Good night, and God bless. Good night.